We'll call up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, May 14th. Mr. Stembridge, we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2554A. Would you remind us of our bill?
This is a House bill, Mr. Chairman. This is 2554A. It expands the definition of vulnerable user of a public way to include any farm, tractor, implement, husbandry, or motorcycle for the purpose of determining penalty for reckless driving. You have the -A2 amendment, which deletes motorcycle operator from the definition of vulnerable use of public way.
Okay. And, colleagues, we had a discussion about the addition of the motorcycle in that, and I'll leave it up to the committee. We have a -A2 amendment that restores the bill to its original position, which was adding the farm tractor language.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the -A2 amendment to House Bill 2554.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the -A2 amendment to House Bill 2554. Any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2554 as amended by the -A2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Okay.
And I think I'll ask our local farmer, Martha Schrader.
Thank you.
The bill.
I would be honored.
All right. We'll put up a work session on House Bill 2817A. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2817A authorizes the Oregon Department of Transportation to issue a certificate to operate for-hire carrier of household goods without prior notice of two other certificate holders. It eliminates the current protest and hearing rights of from other certificate holders when the application is under consideration. You have the -A2 amendment, which eliminates the public interest criteria for issuance of their certificate. You also have the -A4, which declares an emergency, makes the date effective October 1st. You may recall the original bill would have gone into effect on January 1st. You had an amendment that made it upon enactment, upon passage, and this was the compromise October 1st, 2009.
Okay, so we have both those elements in these two different amendments. The one is public interest, as Mr. Stembridge said, is the A2, and then the date certain so we could speed up the process that the department felt was a comfortable time frame, October 1st.
So you need to move both bills?
Yes, we need both the A2 and the A4.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A2 amendments to House Bill 2817.
Senator Starr has moved the -A2 amendment to House Bill 2817. Discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A4 amendment to House Bill 2817.
Senator Starr has moved the -A4 amendment to House Bill 2817. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2817 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator George, would you carry this bill for us? Thank you. Open up a public hearing on House Bill. Oh, hold on. I'm going to find out why our esteemed senator has arrived before I decide what we're going to do.
No, we didn't.
Are you here for one of these bills, madam? I'm going to take a guess. Is it 2956?
It is, and I will be the sole
of. All right, we're opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2956 and ask the esteemed senator from the North Coast to come forward.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. The chair was courteous enough to give me the opportunity to add an amendment to House Bill 2956. And because in deference to Senator Schrader, the 11th commandment being thou shalt not surprise thy local government, I did a little trap line check this morning before coming down to offer the amendment, and it seems that the leap from the hypothetical to the reality of an amended bill was just a hill too far. And so with great appreciation to the chair and with acknowledgement on the record for the heroic work of legislative counsel, I'm going to decline to offer the amendment. And I just wanted to come down and tell you that personally because you were so generous in giving me the opportunity.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator. Okay.
Describe what the bill does.
So, Mr. Stembridge, why don't you tell us what the bill was that we're not amending now?
House Bill 2956 requires that requests for proposals and invitations for bid for construction, reconstruction, purchase, rent, lease, or acquisition of interstate bridges contain provisions relating to environmental protection, worker safety, employment of apprentices, preference of procuring products, materials, and this for Oregon. These things would need to be procured from Oregon and or Washington for bridges between the states of Oregon and Washington, or procured in Oregon or Idaho for bridges between the states of Oregon and Idaho.
That would be a bridge too far. Mr. Jensen, Mr. Shipwreck, please come forward.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Kevin Jensen. I'm the business manager for Ironworkers Local 29 in Portland, Oregon. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to hear my testimony on House Bill 2956 and on behalf of the ironworkers in the state to encourage the passage of this law, bill into law. HB 2956 is a fairly simple policy. It states that for any RFP or invitation to bid on an interstate bridge project, that the contracting agency will give preference to procuring products, materials, and components that are fabricated within the boundaries of this state or an adjoining state, and here is the important part, to the maximum extent feasible and practicable. The bill outlines certain components to be taken into account. For instance, whether transportation, costs, and other conveniences favor or disfavor using products, materials, and components manufactured in this state or the adjoining state. Whether the sites at which the products are fabricated are in close proximity to the bridge location, and whether those bridge components can be recycled. And I would say add that the components for the bridge can be made from recycled materials. There is nothing in the bill that expressly requires the use of local products, materials, and components, only that an attempt must be made. And while it is a simple policy, the impact of this bill could be great. The talk about job stimulus within this country, when they talk about a job the size of the Columbia River crossing at $4 billion, is a job stimulus into itself. The unemployment within our trade for the outside ironworkers is at 15%. Our apprentices is closer to 25%. The shopmen who would be involved in the fabrication and building of the components are probably running closer to 40 or 50% unemployment. We have some of the best manufacturers, fabricators within the country, if not the world, located in the Portland area vicinity. And it would be very important and provide a lot of jobs for those people and a boost to the economy. If you hate to use the term trickle down, I remember that terminology fairly well. Nothing ever trickled down to me. But the use of local contractors and support services, I believe that would also impact our economy and create a very large number of jobs. So in closing, I just would encourage you to pass this bill and help us get it into law and improve the confidence of the people within this state that our job stimulus money is being spent here where it's needed in our state to employ Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Mr. Shipwreck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Bob Shipwreck, Oregon Building Trades Council. I really just showed up to lend some support to Kevin. Just a couple comments, though. Should this interstate bridge be built, it would be the largest public works project ever conducted in the state. The fears that Kevin has, as well as the rest of the building trades, you might recall that the Narrows Bridge in Tacoma was fabricated, I believe, in Korea.
That's correct.
So all that work was done elsewhere. The thing that I also want to impress upon the committee, my last comment is that, and Kevin did say it, it's simply a bill that would help to try and do that. It is not a mandate, therefore does not suffer from any legal questions that we can find. So it's just an attempt to see what we can do to try and get local people as many jobs on this project and others that may come up in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shipwreck. Any questions for Mr. Jensen or Mr. Shipwreck? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Amy Joyce. We could put a billboard on this or something? Welcome. LED billboard. Welcome to Oregon.
That's how we're paying for the Columbia Crossing.
That's it.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Hopefully we've talked about billboards for the last this session. Instead, here today on House Bill 2956, handed out some written testimony. I'll just hit the two high points of that to inform the committee about, of course, federal requirements prohibiting in-state preferences and criteria that would lead to in-state preferences. We have to follow that federal law. And secondly, for those projects that, for instance, would involve solely state money, for which we would then not be bound by that federal law, the concern about other states imposing reciprocal types of provisions. In other words, Oregon, we ourselves have a provision in our state law saying that those states that have in-state preference provisions, we're going to put that back on them. And so it's reasonable to anticipate that the passage of a law like this would result in that being imposed upon Oregon workers and Oregon manufacturers by other states. Those are the concerns of the department on the bill, and I'd welcome any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce. But as the bill explicitly said, the preferences kind of stop at the line where they violate law. So I would assume the department would, as you had indicated, not be crossing that.
Chair Metzger, that's correct.
Okay. Senator Berger.
Well, I guess that I'm a little troubled by that. You say that from the federal perspective, giving preference to products and materials may restrict competition. On the other hand, you have some leeway, don't you, within the department when you are selecting products? You don't necessarily have to take the cheapest product or the lowest bid. It doesn't keep other state products from being involved in the mix, but don't you have some discretion about doing what you feel is best for Oregon?
Senator Metzger and Senator Verger, primarily we accept the low bid. So some of these factors in the bill don't necessarily appear to really involve any kind of in-state preference, but some appear to do so. So we, for the most part, are a low bid state, and that's what we would be looking at.
Follow up, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair? What is the terminology on not the low bid, but there's another word? There's another bid? What is the terminology for that?
Chair Metzger, Senator Verger, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're referencing. Maybe I'm blanking.
Would somebody like to add something to that? I got people
responsible bill.
I believe the terminology she's looking for is lowest responsible bid.
Is that what you're looking for?
There you go. That's it. Responsible bidder. Well, that's too bad, because I think that I'm not trying to interfere with competition and that everybody should have a right to compete, but I think in the final analysis you should be able to have some way of being sure that Oregon is taken care of, even if it is federal dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my personal opinion.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. So I'm looking at the summary of your testimony, and it's basically, obviously, it summarizes the bill. The bill requires the department to give preference to products and materials produced in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, taking into consideration federal law and other factors. And the next sentence says, these in-state preferences found in the bill cannot be applied to any project, including federal money, which includes the CRC, which we heard testimony earlier about. Federal law prohibits use of in-state preferences for federal aid projects. Does this bill do anything?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, for those projects that are funded completely by state dollars, yes, it does. That in-state preference appears to be able to be exercised. I would also say that some of the factors under that direction for in-state preference don't appear to lead to any kind of in-state preference. For instance, the use of recycled materials or the ability to recycle materials, that wouldn't necessarily lead to any kind of in-state preference. So that that seems to have an impact or a real result from this bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Is it realistic to believe that, or conclude that any bridge project that the department is contemplating would not include any bridge project between two states that the department is contemplating wouldn't include federal funding?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, no, I don't think it's realistic to think there wouldn't be some federal money involved.
Thank you.
Mr. Joyce, I do have one question for you. One of the things that we're doing in this legislature and probably in the next legislature is working on various environmental standards. And there's some of that language in here about environmental protection, et cetera, and close proximity to the bridge. When you do contracting, some things are embedded in the rules that aren't necessarily restrictive to other outside entities. But the qualifications, you know, kind of point that direction. So, for example, could you be including your contract to meet state emission goals, et cetera, different requirements for, in other words, the amount of travel that's taken to bring components and the carbon and other things that may be involved in transporting those as part of the bid process when you select a little bidder, that besides just the cost, it's also the environmental cost that we are establishing, whereas if you're bringing something from three states away on a big truck as opposed to something that's built on Swan Island, it would have that carbon advantage. Are those things that can be incorporated in because you're not necessarily talking about any state or others, but rather by meeting a standard that's separate from just the cost of the material?
Chair Metzger, certainly that's something we could put in to the bid documents or the contract, whether the Federal Highway Administration would deem that kind of factoring to be a roundabout way of getting to in-state preferences is a question. I think we'd have to direct to Federal Highway if that's a route that the legislature directed us to go.
Okay. Other questions from Ms. Joyce? Any other thoughts from the committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, the only thing I can think of is it just seems preposterous to me that the federal government can have this kind of restriction on the state, and yet they can actually do construction in Iraq without a bid and pick one company. So, I mean, you know, when you talk about fairness, it's just so hypocritical.
Well, there's rationale for not having in-state preferences. I mean, and I don't see anybody here from the contracting community, but, you know, if other states basically did pass similar laws, well, we're only going to let, you know, Washington State contractors bid in Washington State projects or California, I mean, you go on and on. So there's, you know, Oregon companies want to do work in California and Idaho and Washington State, and they don't want those states to pass, you know, in-state preferences either. And, you know, Interstate Commerce Clause, I think, is at play here. I'm going to support this bill. I'm just not sure it does a lot. You know, potentially there are some things that the department can contemplate here that will benefit Oregon products, steel, concrete, and those kinds of things. But, you know, we are playing in a very limited kind of atmosphere here.
Well, I appreciate that, Senator Starr, and I share those sentiments. I think that we're well aware of those limitations, and but I think there is, especially something as big as this project, as Mr. Jensen said, would be the biggest public works project ever in the state, and maybe not for Washington State, but one of their top ones, that even a first step of stating that how important this is for Oregon jobs and materials, and that is something that we're focused on, even if the specificity can't necessarily always be enforced. Sometimes when you make those statements, it encourages others to really look very carefully about that, and so I think there is an advantage to that. Okay, well, let's close the public hearing on House Bill 2956 and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the Senate floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2956 to the floor to due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection. So ordered. Who would like to carry this bill? Senator Verger, you're a good advocate for local business. Would you carry the bill?
I'll carry the bill.
Thank you. We'd love to have your comments you made in committee on the floor. That would be very helpful, I think. We'll open up a public hearing now on House Bill 2953. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2953A provides that a contracting agency may reject a bid for public improvement contract if the bidder does not demonstrate that they are responsible. This bill provides that a bidder must demonstrate responsibility by showing that the bidder has licenses that are required in order to undertake the work specified in the contract, that the bidder is covered by workers' compensation coverage, as well as liability and other insurance and amounts required in the solicitation for public the public improvement contract.
I have two people to sign up, Terry Hatch and Philip Kennedy Wong. So they want to come forward. Mr. Hatch.
Good afternoon, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. My name is Terry Hatch. I'm the executive manager of the Oregon Pacific Cascade Chapter of NECA, and I'm here to demonstrate our strong support for this bill. 2953A levels the playing field for contractors bidding for public improvement contracts by explicitly requiring that they have licenses and insurance to legally require to do business in Oregon. This bill is not only good for responsible contracts, it's good for the state. With stimulus dollars coming down from the state and federal governments, it's important that this public money be given to companies that do not pose a risk. HB 2953A increases the likelihood that the state will hire a contractor who complies with employment laws and regulations, pays taxes, and has completed a state's mandatory training, and also fulfills permit inspection requirements. This bill would give government officials the necessary direction to ensure that they're getting qualified contractors. Both sides of labor and management support this bill. Shops that have collective bargaining agreements and open shops support this bill. While in the House committee, no group testified in opposition, and it passed out of the full House. Representatives out of single no vote. We'd like to ask you to support HB 2953A. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Holman.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, for the record, Philip Kennedy Wong with Multnomah County. Multnomah County does not have a position on this bill. I just want to clarify that at the outset. But we do have a request on a minor amendment that we think that would be to the benefit of both parties. And let me explain what our request is. In a bidding process, our county has a lot of, obviously, RFPs out there in which we process. And there's a provision within this bill that would require providing proof of insurance up front during the bidding process. And for our needs and our purposes, we typically do not require the proof of insurance from bidders only at the time when the county is ready to make the award. And at that point, we will ask the bidder then to furnish proof of insurance. So the rationale for this amendment would essentially help ease the administrative time it would take to process the proof of insurance. And from my understanding, talking to our procurement manager, that this too would save time and money on the part of the bidders. So they would not need to request a proof of insurance from the insurer, and they would only request that if they are, given the award. That concludes my testimony. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Phil, thank you, Mr. Kennedy Wong. On your point first, and colleagues, he's talking about page 3, lines 8 and 9. And first of all, I don't read it that way. It says is covered by liability insurance and other insurance in amounts the contracting agency, in this case you, require in the solicitation document. So if you don't require it, then they don't have to have it at that point. Now, if where it says is covered by liability insurance, if there was a semicolon after that, I could see why you would say that, but that's a continuous sentence, so I don't see that as an issue. I mean, I appreciate you bringing it, but if your agency does not require that in the solicitation documents, then that wouldn't change that. That's how I read that. Either on the issue or on Mr. Kennedy Wong's point, any questions? See where I'm coming from on that?
I'm sorry.
You see where I'm coming from on that?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
I just, and maybe if this was January, we could talk about semicolons and stuff more, but I think I would prefer to move on.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to point out that the same language appears in another spot in the bill, and I think you're referring to that same language in the other part of the bill, too, on page 4.
Yes.
Lines 20 and 21.
Right. And the same, again, there's no semicolon after liability insurance. So So it would be up to you folks.
Okay. Thank you both very
much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2953.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2953 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I read the bill and I don't find anything too objectionable in the bill, but I do want to kind of warn everybody that's here and listening on this particular bill. Every time we add requirements to people who can bid on public contracts, it reminds me of that testimony we had on the AIG situation where we just keep making certain firms bigger and bigger and eliminating startups. And I don't see anything in this that really alarms me that much. I'm going to support the bill, but I would hate for us to go down that path of getting firms that were so big that there's only a few providers in the state that actually can bid on our state projects. And so I just kind of want to put that warning out there, but at the same time, I don't see anything in this bill that would necessarily convince me that this is worth voting again. So I'm going to vote yes, but I want to put the warning on the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator George. Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. Senator Schreier, would you carry this one?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mr. Stembridge, maybe just about not only Monday, but kind of just the last four meetings or whatever that we have.
We have about 15 bills in committee that we're still dealing with. We have five of them scheduled for Monday, another three scheduled for Wednesday. The others are pending. That's what we have. We have bills scheduled all next week. We have nothing scheduled for the following week, so intending to carry things over if need be, if we get sudden amendment requests and things like that, amendment requests that you deem to be worthy.
Okay. And just a kind of a note on that, as you know, colleagues, we're in our last 2 weeks of this committee, so for all, and one of those days, we probably will not be here, which is Memorial Day, which would normally be a committee day for us. So we're going to try to get this stuff all scheduled next week. If there are any amendments, we really have to have them next week because we're not going to be able to wait until the following week because we won't get fiscals and the well will not be able to get out. We do have a couple of interesting issues, though, that has been signed to our committee, so at least we'll have some fun, I think, the last couple of weeks.
Mr. Chair, did I miss a vote?
Oh, yes. I think the first bill, we had two members that were missed. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. That was 2554. I believe Senator George and Senator Berger were gone. We adopted the A2 and A4 amendments, which deleted the motorcycle from the bill and then passed it out of committee.
That removed the motorcycle?
Yes.
Okay.
And if I would request unanimous consent of the committee to reopen the work session on House Bill 2554A for the purposes of allowing Senator George and Senator Berger to vote. Is there any objection? So ordered. So, Senator Starr, we have opened a work session on House Bill 2554A as amended.
So moved.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2554A as amended to the floor of due pass recommendation. Senator Berger, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Senator George, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. They will record as aye votes. We'll close the work session and we're done with committee. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Is that what you wanted?